LBC News Talk 97.3. News.
It's 9 o'clock. This is Ian Ramage. A road sweeper and a lollipop man are among the many who've been honoured in the latest Queen's birthday list. Sweeper Philip Mitchell from West Sussex and 91-year-old Jack Collier from Rugby get MBEs. Jack says it's wonderful and he won't quit yet.
I'm the lollipop man, I am. I'm not looking for finishing at all. All I can say is it's a wonderful job. I've done 26 years and I've enjoyed every bit of it.
Among the other awards, the Met Police Chief Paul Condon is knighted. The former head of the anti-terrorist branch, George Churchill Coleman, receives an OBE. A host of sporting stars have been honoured, including Bobby Charlton, also knighted. Diana Rigg, who played Emma Peel in The Avengers, has become a dame. And fellow actor Richard Wilson, alias grumpy Victor Meldrew, receives an OBE. He says he was in two minds about accepting it.
As everyone probably knows, I am a member of the Labour Party, and I had to think about whether it was right to accept these awards. And I decided to, especially because it was for services as a director, actor to drama.
The Labour leadership favourite, Tony Blair, kicks off his campaign for the job today, saying the party needs a clear sense of its own modern identity. He's been setting out his vision in an interview for the FT. Later today, in his Sedgefield constituency, the Shadow Home Secretary will formally declare himself a candidate. But the Treasury Secretary, Michael Portillo, says he could have trouble keeping up the momentum for Labour in the coming months.
It depends whether, after a few months, Tony Blair looks as though he's fresh-faced on what the country's been waiting for, or if, on the other hand, he looks very inexperienced and very indistinct and very fresh-faced and Bambi-like.
Detectives are hunting the killer of a 22-year-old man gunned down in the early hours this morning in Peckham. He's not been named. Police know of no motive. The man was shot near the King's Arms pub in East Dulwich Road. Two suspects fled on foot, but there's little in the way of a description. A school cleaner abducted yesterday in the north of Scotland has been found unharmed. Police have named a man they're looking for as John Hay Angus. It follows an incident yesterday at a school where the acting head teacher was tied up. A D-Day commemoration planned for Hyde Park has been cancelled. The decision follows months of arguments between veterans and the government over the tone and timing of the event. Instead, a family day will take place next year. The Home Office is reviewing certain aspects of security following the theft of the Home Secretary's car. Michael Howard's Granada Scorpio was taken just before he was due to address police chiefs in Wakefield. It was locked and alarmed. It's since been found, but with its five wheels missing. In sports, in rugby union, Ireland have been beaten 32-18 by Australia in Sydney in the second final test. England face South Africa this afternoon in their second and final test in Cape Town. South African rugby officials have ordered a further investigation into the stamping of England fullback Jonathan Callard. In tennis, Jeremy Bates is out of the Stella Artois Championships at Queen's Club. The British number one lost in straight sets in the quarterfinals to the unseeded Swede Jan Appel. Speculations intensifying that Nigel Mansell will return to Formula One, albeit on a part-time basis. He's in IndyCar action in Toronto this weekend. Now, a look at London's weather prospects, and John Smith's at the London Weather Centre.
It's a bright morning, and it's likely to stay that way right the way through the day, with some sunshine at times, though there will be some patchy high clouds making the sunshine appear hazy. A little bit warmer than yesterday, with temperatures up to 18 or 19 Celsius, the mid-60s Fahrenheit, and just a light northwesterly wind. Through this evening and tonight, staying dry, staying quite clear as well, and with the winds falling light, turning misty in some of the suburbs. Fairly mild night, though, lowest temperature about 10 Celsius, 50 Fahrenheit. And then tomorrow, I think plenty of sunshine right the way through the day, just some patchy cloud around, and turning out even warmer, up to 20 Celsius, 68 Fahrenheit. If you're heading off towards the coast, though, it will be a little bit cooler with some sea breezes coming in. And looking at the beginning of next week, it's becoming even warmer with plenty of sunshine. I think temperatures are likely to hit the mid-20s. This is John Smith at the London Weather Centre.
I had a nasty shock when I looked at the new company car tax rules. It looked like a straight choice. Either pay more tax, downgrade my car, or opt out of the company car scheme altogether. Until I looked at the Saab 9000 CSE. For someone like me, a 40% taxpayer driving less than 18,000 miles a year, the Saab 9000 CSE gives me a premium mark, and I pay £480 less than I did last year. You know, I love getting one up on the tax man.
The Saab 9000 CSE, a premium car that doesn't carry a premium car tax. And now all Saab 9000 CSEs, registered and delivered before the 30th of June, will have their audio systems upgraded to a Sony 10-disc auto changer at no extra charge. When it's your choice, are you really going to choose anything less? Dial 100 and ask for free phone London Saab dealers.
This is the Steve Jones Breakfast Show.
On LBC, the Voice of London, good morning and welcome. If you've just joined us, it's 6 minutes past nine. Great to have your company. We're here through till 10 o'clock, of course. And we'll begin by going overseas. President Clinton has announced a further set of sanctions designed to force the military rulers in Haiti from power. The president says he's standing by Haiti's elected president, who was overthrown in a military coup 3 years ago. But as LBC's Simon Marks reports from Washington, some of President Clinton's critics say only U.S. military muscle can now restore democracy in Haiti.
Just 2 weeks ago, President Clinton announced sanctions that he hoped would bring the military rulers in Haiti to their knees. But a fortnight later, the military are still in power, and Haiti's elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, is still in exile here in Washington. So President Clinton says it's time to get even tougher with the military in Haiti. At a White House news conference, he announced that he's telling U.S. airlines they can no longer fly to Haiti, and banning any financial transactions between the U.S. and Haitian enterprises.
These steps represent an important new stage in our efforts to restore democracy and return President Aristide to Haiti. The message is simple. Democracy must be restored. The coup must not endure.
The last set of sanctions the president announced were widely ignored by black marketeers in the Dominican Republic, the country which shares the island of Hispaniola with Haiti. But now the government in the Dominican Republic says it will enforce the president's blockade, and the U.S. is sending advisers to help the Dominicans seal their border with Haiti. The White House believes that will make the new sanctions effective, but there is considerable skepticism in Washington over whether the trade blockade will work, and considerable speculation that the president will soon be forced to take military action to restore democracy in Haiti. Mr. Clinton's special advisor on the crisis, William Gray, repeated what he said for over a month now, that nothing is being ruled out.
All options are on the table. We're going to be analyzing and reviewing the situation daily and weekly in Haiti to determine the effectiveness of these sanctions as well as those that are now in place and determining what our next steps should be.
Short of military action, there are very few further steps President Clinton can take to force the military from power in Haiti. And with pictures appearing in American newspapers showing children starving in Haiti, many Americans believe sanctions are hurting the wrong people there. Mr. Gray says if the local population is suffering, it's the fault of the military.
The suffering of those children is not a suffering caused by United States sanctions or world sanctions. The suffering of those children has been caused by a society that continues to ignore the needs of its majority citizens for the needs of the few, and that if you're going to correct that situation, democracy is the first step.
There is, however, a growing sense in Washington that with so much criticism currently being aimed at the president's foreign policy, he may choose to make an example of Haiti and launch a military initiative there to prove there is a limit to his patience. If military action is being planned, the trade blockade designed to isolate Haiti could certainly help increase the chances that U.S. Marines would be welcomed as liberators.
Simon Marks there, reporting from the United States. It's 9 minutes past nine. We'll return to the Queen's birthday honours list now. We were discussing that with David Spaniard just under an hour ago here on the Steve Jones Breakfast Show. And, of course, there are plenty of famous people who have received awards, knighthoods for Bobby Charlton and Tim Rice. And we've been talking about Richard Wilson, a knighthood for Paul Condon, of course, the Metropolitan Police Force. Well, another of the recipients of an honour in the Queen's list is Larry Hollingworth, the U.S. UN HCR aid worker who made so many memorable appearances on our TV screens during the Bosnian crisis when he was working out there. In fact, he left in March of this year. He received a CBE and he's on the line to us this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
First of all, congratulations.
Many thanks to you.
Presumably for your work in Bosnia, or do you think that it goes back to for work also that you've done in other parts of the world?
Well, no, I think it was specifically for Bosnia, and I think it's, you know, very much on behalf of UNHCR out there. There's a lot of people who are shared in my award. There's no doubt about that.
Because you personally, of course, experienced a lot of danger there. Were you not held at gunpoint by Serb soldiers for quite some time?
I was at one stage, yes, yeah.
How did you feel at that moment?
I mean, I felt really angry, to be quite frank, because I was trying to get in at the time to a place called Jepa, and they were just deliberately keeping me back. And it was the culmination of about 3 days' worth of attempts by me. They just got fed up with me. There's no doubt about that.
When you quit, it was in March of this year, I think, wasn't it?
I left. I've been back about 3 or 4 weeks.
Simply that, because yes. at the time, I believe that you did think that maybe the war was almost over.
Yeah, I'm still a great optimist. I really am. You know, they're certainly the Croats and the Muslims are side by side at the moment. The Serbs, if they give up some territory, then everyone will be very happy. At the moment, there is a mood for peace. Mr. Akashi said a couple of days ago that he wanted a miracle, and blow me down if the following day he didn't get a miracle. They actually agreed to some sort of ceasefire. I really just want the killing to stop. That's the most important thing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the fact that you and your like have been there, do you think it has helped in some peculiar way almost prolong the war without your presence, that there might have been a greater loss of life, but the war might have been a short, sharp one?
I think, you know, that is a valid criticism. The only thing is, of course, that there are victims of the war that were the women and children, and our job was to feed them. We it could be levelled at us that we've prolonged it, but if we have prolonged it, we've done it, if you like, for the most purest of reasons.
As I mentioned, you've worked in Sudan, Somalia and Kenya. Were you surprised by what you encountered and what you had to do when you actually got to Bosnia? Because there we are in a country which is, to all intents and purposes, in our own backyard. I mean, Yugoslavia, as it was, a great holiday destination for many Britons.
No, absolutely right. I mean, it staggered me. I didn't think that we would be seeing a refugee crisis in Europe. I went to see Schindler's List a couple of days ago, and I just couldn't believe that, you know, if I hadn't been to Bosnia, I would have thought to myself, well, thank God that sort of era is over. But having just come back from Bosnia, where people are in camps, where people are made homeless, where there are presumably people making Schindler's Lists, it very much depressed me, the situation in Bosnia.
But the camps are as bad as that, are they?
The camps were. I mean, there's very few of them now, but there were. In the early stages of the war, some of those camps were abysmal. And it's amazing that we can keep on doing this to each other.
To what level do you think, therefore, there have been severe war crimes committed during this Bosnian conflict?
Oh, I think a lot of people are going to have to answer for some very serious charges. There's no doubt about that at all.
And we don't seem to ever learn any lessons, do we? I mean, as you say, Schindler's List there, reflecting on what happened during the Second World War. We've been talking about that greatly recently, with 50 years on from D-Day.
Right.
What has changed, one asks oneself?
Yeah, it is amazing. I just don't know why we have to destroy each other. I really cannot believe that. We should all be working for a nice, happy, peaceful, better world.
So you haven't learned to understand the human nature more from the work that you've done in Bosnia and these other places that I mentioned?
I think I just get more frustrated by it, really. Because, again, the majority of people that I deal with, I mean, the person in the street, they all want peace, they all want quiet, they all want to live side by side. So I keep on asking myself, who is fueling this?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe we should learn to live without politicians.
Indeed, I think we should possibly learn to live without very ambitious and over-ambitious leaders.
Oh, well, on that note, we'll take that to heart, Larry. Thank you for joining us this morning, and congratulations again on your award.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Larry Hollingworth there, who worked with UNHCR as an aid worker in Bosnia, before that in Sudan, Somalia and Kenya. He's just been back from Bosnia 3 or 4 weeks, as he was telling us, and has received a CBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours List. It's now 14 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back with some movies, and John Marriott will have the details, certainly on the big movie of the week, and perhaps we'll get a word or two on Pierce Brosnan and the prospects for him when he makes his first James Bond outing next year.
By collecting the Great British Summer tokens in the Daily Telegraph, you can get discounts on a whole range of the best attractions in your own backyard. Leisure centres, museums, castles, theme parks, National Trust properties. In fact, you won't want to go abroad. No wonder some continental hoteliers are going round the twist. Oh, dear.
The Great British Summer Offer in the Daily Telegraph starts this Saturday, June the 11th.
Hello, London. Kiki D here to tell you all about Cabaroo Stroller from 94. It's an easy-going 10-mile stroll around town with music, entertainment, free drinks and Cadbury's chocolate, and lots of fun for everyone. You'd be helping one small step and save the children. So call the hotline now for your free registration pack on 071-232-2255. That's 071-232-2255. Cadbury's Stroller from 94, supported by LBC.
This is the Steve Jones Breakfast Show.
Well, I did, and...
So it's movie time here on the Bigger, Brighter Breakfast Show, and with us is the Bigger, Brighter Aberdonian, and it's John Marriott. Good morning, sir.
Shaken, but not quite stirred.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll come to that, maybe. but let's look at the first movie you've got here, and probably is the big one of the week. I've seen the trailers for this, and it looked extremely entertaining, but of course they can just show you the good bits. Mm. And this is Serial Mom with Kathleen Turner.
And it is Serial Mom, as Americans are wont to
yes.
say. And, yes, for once, everything else is as good as the trailer.
It is.
This is a wonderful black comedy, Steve, made by John Waters. Now, John Waters started out as a kind of left-of-field cult item with pictures like Pink Flamingo. And, of course, he and Divine rode to success on the back of each other. Divine then died. And whether that was coincidental or not, after that point, when Waters made Hairspray, he came barging into the mainstream as he ever is. But he found a much broader audience for that picture, and he will do so with this. Now, Waters is a very bright man. He's very intelligent. He's very, very good at threading quite serious ideas into a very campy, nicely overcooked picture. And what he's particularly good at is lifting the lid on Middle America. And here he takes the suburban American heartland and sticks his finger in it and moves it around and produces a lot of fun. And at the centre of it, we've got Kathleen Turner, very good as this socially poised, very correct, very concerned suburban mum, who, as the film goes on, we discover is a rather nasty serial killer.
Or is she?
She is. That's Spaldofina. Now, that's actually not part of the...
Oh, is it not?
It won't ruin for you to know that. I mean, she quite clearly is, because some way into the film we see her kill someone. Mm. And, in fact, the deaths are sometimes quite graphic. And I think one of the serious notions that Waters is throwing up here for us to look at is, can you laugh at anything? Now, of course, you can, because once a writer or journalist makes you laugh, they've got you. But that is one of the issues on board here. And he's taken his cue from pictures like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, Silence of the Lambs, which is big Hollywood business now, and he's filtered it through black comedy. Now, Kathleen Turner is wonderful because the film opens with her in this 50s-style patterned dress with all the right kind of chintzy pictures on the wall. Everything is neat, everything is clean. This could be the 50s, in fact, and it's quite a shock to discover that it's the 90s. But she's so conventional, she could be living at any point in the last 40 years.
Yeah, she looked a bit in the trailers, a little bit like sort of a June Allison character.
Absolutely. Yes. June Allison, that's right. Doris Day, that kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
Very squeaky clean, very friendly, very smiling, but in a totally unsensual way. Mm-hmm. Everything's correct. So correct, in fact, that when the police arrive to investigate the first murder, the first thing she asks them to do is to remove their gum. And Sam Waterston, who shot to fame in The Killing Fields, is marvellous as this very meek as mild, slightly put upon, but very big-hearted husband. And he reads his paper at breakfast, and he emits a volley of yes, dears, and no, dears. He's Mr. Bland, you know.
So it's like a TV family,
exactly.
Yes,
I mean, it's camp. It's camp, but it never becomes unbelievable.
Mm.
Because some writers who indulge in camp, they overcook it to the point where it becomes ludicrous. And even the barmiest universe has to have a handhold in the real world. And this certainly does. Now, she goes on to become Serial Mum. And the murders become more and more bloody, really, more and more barmy. And one of the great gags in the film is that her children, her eldest son particularly, who likes video nasties, and by the way, these are real video nasties, not what the tabloids want us to believe are video nasties, is watching these rather ghastly films. And he grows up well-adjusted, not inclined to mug old grannies. Kathleen Turner and her generation, who've never seen this stuff, are turning into killers. So, of course, that in itself is a dig at the politically correct brigade who want to censor everything. There's lots of asides in this, lots of detail. The smallest cameos, even the dustbin men, are very full. Everything has a point. And it moves with that kind of relentless, high-energy pace of the best kind of screwball comedy. It has that pace of 30 screwball, the kind of thing you don't really see much nowadays. And it manages to be funny one moment, quite serious the next. And the comedy, it's black comedy, but it can also be very broad. It can be much narrower and witty and satirical. It's all kinds of comedy, all rolled up in one big, fun snowball. I think the casting is kind of genius casting. I wouldn't have thought Kathleen Turner could have carried this off, but she really can. And as with films like this, which work best, they always work best, Steve, when they're played straight. I can't stand films where you can almost see the cast mugging to the camera as the next gag's about to arrive. And Walters is on, for him, safe turf. He's very good at mining the same seam. But like Woody Allen, he can come up with something fresh time and again. And, of course, also sends up all the serial killer films that we know, love, hate, whatever. But great fun. And you know, it's quite a different film from the last time I laughed loudly, which was Four Weddings and a Funeral. Mm-hmm. But this is much more bad taste, so I recommend it.
Excellent.
You know, if you don't like bad taste, I would say if you're a bit straight as a person, if you can't really think laterally, you might not get off on this. I mean, it is pretty quirky, but this is my kind of humour. I mean, this really is the kind of thing I laugh at in private.
Yes. This boy is twisted, folks.
Yes.
So that is Serial Mom starring Kathleen Turner. Well, you mentioned casting, and therefore it's a suitable point for us, of course, to talk about the new James Bond. We did mentioned it before, you and I, some weeks ago, but Pierce Brosnan has now been officially announced to be the new 007. I heard him interviewed one of our news bulletins here a couple of days ago. He seems to want to take the character back to where it was with Sean Connery. Mind you, Timothy Dalton said that too, and it didn't quite work.
The thing is with Dalton, let's start with Dalton. Dalton lacked charisma. He did not have star quality. Now, you must have that as Bond. You must be an adequate actor. But let's face it, you can get through a Bond film as an actor on the basis of kind of relentless plotting, gung-ho action, lots of gadgets and girls. You just need to make sure you're saying the lines at the right time, at the right speed. I mean, Connery was always quite a good actor, but he learned a lot about acting through playing Bond. And even 30 years ago, Sean didn't know he would become a great actor. He didn't know he had that in him, even though he'd made a picture like The Hill. Do you remember with Sidney Lumet?
Indeed I do.
Harry Andrews.
Yes.
That was good. But even then, he didn't know he'd become great. You don't need to be a great actor. You need to look good, you need to be suave, you need to have a kind of darkness about you. As for taking it back to what Ian Fleming intended, like the Connery films, it's very difficult. Because starting with Roger Moore, the whole Bond genre headed very quickly down that route towards self-parody. Mm. And the whole film, the whole Bond genre, has become this overblown gag.
And of course we live in an entirely different world now. I mean, it's post-Berlin Wall, Cold War and all of that sort of
stuff.
I
don't think that really matters, because I think that, you know, the Bond films long since stopped having a toehold in the real world. People want this overexcited cartoon action. They want the girls, they want the gadgets, they want the glib asides. And in fact, the glib asides started this trend, which you now get in very violent films, like the Willis and Schwarzenegger and Stallone films, where a violent scene ends on a gag, and that's very questionable morally. But I think to try and go back would give the audience something they didn't expect, and I don't think Cubby Broccoli will play with box office. They are, by the way, they have been talking, you might not know this, to Anthony Hopkins to play the villain. Now, of course, as we know from Silence of the Lambs, he's a great villain. He's also a big box office. It's now 1989 since we had the last Bond film.
A suitable break, I think, actually, and therefore we will have forgotten Timothy Dalton and may be willing to take on board Pierce Brosnan, who certainly has, if you ask the ladies, has got the eyes for it, if nothing else.
Well, they did. I mean, they did a very intensive marketing in America, and he was, I think, 90-something percent of ordinary Joes in America said they wanted Brosnan. I mean, he looks the part. He's also, I believe...
He was very good in Mrs. Doubtfire, I thought. It was a smallish role, but he was excellent.
I was going to say, I also, from Robin Williams, he said in name-dropping, I also learned that Brosnan is very good in real life, offstage, with dry wit, which is what you need. You see, Dalton was served with these one-liners. Now, Dalton really can't be funny on screen to save his life. He can't be dry. He can't be funny. Roger Moore was great at that, in a much more hilarious way. Sean was good at being dry. As for going back, I think he'll find himself boxed in by what's now a very established cartoon formula. But he'll do well.
Good. OK, so Pierce Brosnan is the new James Bond. And finally, it has to be briefly as well, your second movie of this week, which is In Custody, which marks a directorial debut, but for a famous person.
For Ishmael Merchant, who normally works as James Ivory's producer.
Yes.
If you're expecting a Merchant Ivory film, you won't get it. This is something quite different. It's Ishmael Merchant filming his passion. He's paying tribute to the Urdu language in India. And he does this through a provincial teacher in India who seeks to track down the last surviving Urdu poet. And when he goes to find him, his tape recorder breaks down. He discovers the poet is fat, debauched, disheveled. And that really is the story. It's about trying to be an idealist in the midst of a fairly grotty world. It's about the fact that art survives even in the midst of day-to-day horrors. You know, idealism and art don't exist in a vacuum. Ishmael Merchant has shot this very classically. By that I mean it's a bit stodgy. There's quite a lot of talking. The camera moves slowly, but often without resonance. It's not a bad first-time directing effort. I don't know whether he wants to continue. He was certainly keen to film this particular passion of his, to kind of celebrate the Urdu language. But he has no intention of giving up producing, and I don't recommend he does.
Thank you. And on that terse note, we'll say thank you very much, and I'll see you again in 3 weeks' time.
Oh, you're off, eh?
I'm off, yes.
And, vive la France, etc.
It is vive la France, yes. I've had to push all of my holiday out. I know I was only away about 5 or 6 weeks ago, but I've had to take it all at the back end of this year, you see.
Well, if I do end up buying a place there, you will never get rid of me, even on Saturdays.
I'm sure of that. Next week you'll be with Mr. Mann, and he's an old chum anyway, isn't he?
Oh, yes, and a neighbour.
Looking at the roads in London, Oxford Street has temporarily been closed from Oxford Circus westbound to New Cavendish Street and eastbound to Hollis Street. We had delay southbound along Putney Bridge earlier on because of an accident, although that's easing. Looking elsewhere, Bayswater Road, that's also closed temporarily. That's near Edgware Road. That's because a vehicle has been on fire. And Marylebone Road at the junction with Baker Street. Roadworks there, that means westbound it's down to one lane, and that's likely to go on until 1 o'clock this afternoon. Moving on to North London now, on the A406 North Circular Road, between Manor Cottage Junction and Finchley High Road, down to one lane in each direction, traffic moving slowly through there. And in Edmonton on the North Circular, westbound at the junction with Montague Road, they've got roadworks and traffic lights have failed in the area too. Traffic lights have also failed in Pimlico at Ebury Bridge Road at the junction with Pimlico Road, in South Hackney where Caslin Street joins Well Street, and Swiss Cottage, Fairfax Road at the junction with Finchley Road. That's causing one or two problems too. Trooping the Colour, that's going on this morning. Various road closures taking place around Horse Guards Parade and the Mall. Baron's Court, the Stella Artois tennis continues at Queen's Club. And later this morning in Finsbury Park, it's going to get very busy because of the FLA, which is an Irish music festival. They say about 30,000 people are expected, to try and avoid Finsbury Park unless you're going to that Irish music festival a little bit later on this morning. And looking at the tubes now, on the Central Line, there are no trains running between Loughton and Epping. Buses are replacing the train service there, and buses also replacing trains between Hainault and Woodford. Otherwise, London's Underground is running well.
If you need an exhaust for your car, head for your local QuickFit centre now. We have a huge range in stock at really competitive prices. For your nearest QuickFit centre, call free on 0800 222 111.
John Kay at the LBC Traffic Centre.
John, thank you for that. We'll hear from John again in about 25 minutes. It's Steve Jones with you here on LBC. I was John Marriott was talking to us, wasn't he, about an Urdu poet a few moments ago. We have a Liverpudlian poet to join us in around 15 minutes. That's Brian Patton. When the show's over today, I'm going to head down to the Jubilee Gardens on the South Bank. About £10,000 is being raised by walkers and joggers for the cancer charity Backup today. And indeed, they're sponsored by Peno, and they've got to be coming in on the first of them anyway, arriving at around about midday. And I'll be down there to glad hand and say hello. And indeed, take advantage of a very fine offer, which will be open to you if you're down there to say hello at the same time and greet these walkers. A free glass of the old refreshing Pernod Pastis on offer. So we should say chin-chin, cheers and salut if you're down there at midday. In the meantime, we'll break and then come back for the news with Ian Ramage.
Hello. Today on Let's Cook, I'm showing you how to roast your employees. First, take your workforce and place them in a roasting hot office from 9 to 5 at Gas Mark 5. And by 5 o'clock, they should be sweltering hot, completely exhausted and sapped of all energy.
If this is how you're feeling today, call Andrews Air Conditioning for a local instant hire solution to all your temporary cooling requirements, for every workplace, whatever the size. To find out more about Andrews portable air conditioners, call your local hire centre free on 0800 211 611. To turn the heat down and efficiency up, we've got the recipe. Andrews, the air conditioning hire specialists. 0800 211 611 or find us in Yellow Pages.
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
The headlines at 9:31. The former UN chief at the High Commissioner for Refugees in Bosnia, Larry Hollingworth.